probably the best food that you can get in Alaska is seafood. We've tried over the years to do agriculture, and we've got some good vegetables, and we had milk for a while, but what we've really got is fish, fish that's famous all over the world. So why aren't we eating more of it? Why don't we eat more of it here? It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is eating local with seafood. Local food movement is huge. Everybody wants to be more responsive environmentally and eat food that comes from where they're at. But the seafood cases in anchor stores tend to be pretty small, and you don't always find seafood on the menu. So we're going to talk about how you can get seafood on the table at your house, even if you're not a fisherman. And I've got a great panel of guests in the studio to talk about this today. Cassandra Squibb is Chief Business Development Officer for Copper River Seafoods. Thanks for being with us, Cassandra.
Thank you.
And Kelly Harrell is Executive Director of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. Thanks for being with us, Kelly.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And what I thought we'd do is in the first half talk about kind of the fish market, how fish gets to us. And in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about preparing fish and the culinary aspects and how you can use fish in your own cooking. And we have a fish expert, a fish cooking expert who's going to be joining us later, Kate Constantine. But, and we also really want to hear your questions your thoughts about cooking and using seafood, and got some good people to answer those questions with us here today. If you are in Anchorage, the phone number here is 550-8433. Statewide, it's 888-353-5752. And you can reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Kelly, I first got interested in doing a show on this topic because I'm hearing about your program to support community-supported fishing, fisheries, similar to community-supported agriculture that's really popular all around the country and a little bit in Alaska, but our agriculture is so seasonal, it's maybe less than it is other places. But we've got so much fish, and you're trying to link fishermen to cooks, to residents, right?
That's correct.
So tell us, how does it work?
So the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, we've been around for about 20 years, and we were founded to fill a unique niche in working to protect the health of Alaska's fisheries on behalf of those who depend on them, on behalf of our small boat fishermen, our commercial residents, who really rely on fisheries for their income and their way of life. So that's what we do, and that involves a variety of things, research, advocacy, and several years ago, about 2011, we recognized that the local food movement was growing, that people were beginning to want to know more about where their food came from, and that we had these really great connections with fishermen that we worked with in places like Kodiak. And we recognized that some of the products they were catching, like Kodiak Tanner crab, were mostly going overseas. They weren't coming to Alaskans. So there was not a lot of connection between places like Kodiak and places here in Anchorage. The story about the product and about their fisheries wasn't being told, and we saw an opportunity to do that by
It used to be like trucks would be parked by the road, and you could sort of like, you know, salmon for sale, and you'd sort of pull over. I don't see that so much anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons for that, and it's tough. We have a massive seafood value chain and economy in Alaska, and of doing things on a smaller scale is challenging logistically and for a lot of other reasons. So we kind of have been diverting a little bit of product away from that global market to keep it right here in state. So seafood caught by Alaskans for Alaskans is one of our mottos, and we started out with Kodiak Tanner crab. It's a really great product, a really great story about how important that fishery is to a diversified portfolio for small boat fishermen in Kodiak, and just an amazing product. And it took off, and it turned out people wanted to buy Kodiak Tanner crab from fishermen where they knew who they were buying it from. They knew what they were supporting, which includes conservation. So part of the proceeds for the program go to our work to help sustain fisheries in Alaska.
So from the point of view of like the somebody who wants to get involved in this, how does it work exactly? Are you linked with a particular fisherman, or how does that work if I want to sign up for it?
So if you want to sign up for it, we've been selling single species at a time. So we started with Kodiak Tanner crab. We've been doing Kodiak jig-caught cod and black rockfish also. And we've also been doing Bristol Bay salmon and Norton Sound king crab. So we're trying to build up our offerings so it's more desirable for people. And we're telling more of these great stories that we have all across Alaska about some of these unique fisheries. So Norton Sound red king crab is another really unique story of where it's a very locally oriented fishery. Norton Sound Seafoods and the Community Development Quota Group out there are very engaged. So we worked with them to get some of that product to people here in Anchorage and tell their great stories. So when we have a species that we're offering, we kind of put it out there on our website and through our e-news and through the Market Fresh column and let people know that they can sign up for the product. And they kind of pay beforehand like a CSA. So before it's harvested, typically they would say if they want like a 10 or a 25 pound box, and all the product we've been doing is frozen, really high quality. And then we let them know when they can pick it up, and they get this great story of their catch with their product, and can take it home and have amazing meals and tell other people about the fish.
So do you like pick it up from some central location, or is it, I know like with Full Circle Farms, it's like, it's at schools, it's all over the place. Do folks like come to your office to get the fish, or how does that work?
Yeah, they have been coming to our office to get the fish. Yeah, we're actually looking for some different solutions, but right now we have quite a few chest freezers in there, and we work with the larger freezer storage in Anchorage, and they kind of bring it over to us, and then we distribute it.
So you're just sort of, this is sort of growing. This is something you're sort of still putting together.
Yeah. So we have five species that have been in our program now, and we're trying to continue to grow it. Things like spot prawns, I think people are really demanding and could be an option. Kachemak Bay mussels or oysters, black cod, halibut. There are all types of things, different kinds of salmon. There's just a lot of variety out there and a lot of stories that there are to be told about a lot of Alaska's fishing families and, again, building those connections and strengthening those connections for the betterment of our state and our economy and our communities here.
So when you talk about the story coming with it, what do you mean exactly?
So the fish that we deliver through our program, typically we can identify the exact fisherman who caught it, and people get that story when they pick up their box. We have a story of your catch. It's a handout. Tells the story of the fisherman, tells something about the fishery, where it came from in the community, and then has a great recipe on the back for preparing the product.
Neat. So let me turn to Cassandra Squibb, who I invited here because I was thinking, well, we should also talk about sort of the traditional like way that we get fish. And you're with Copper River Seafoods, which is a much bigger business than I realized it was. I was thinking that you were just, you know, the Copper River salmon, which is like this Beaujolais of fish that's so exciting. But you actually are doing much, much more than that.
We are. Our company was formed in 1996, so we're relatively young, you know, almost 20 years old, by Scott Blake, who's the president and CEO of our company. He banded together with some Cordova fishermen, really, to, they were all direct marketing their catch to different markets down in the lower 48, and they formed Copper River Seafoods, and our first plant that we had was in Cordova, but now, actually, we have grown. We have facilities in Kenai, where we process cook inlet sockeye. We have two facilities in Bristol Bay, one in Naknek and another in Togiak, which is actually a joint venture with the Traditional Council of Togiak. We also buy fish in Kotzebue. And then in terms of our Anchorage facilities, we have a 50,000 square foot facility down on First Avenue in Anchorage near Alaska Mill and Feed that's actually operating year-round and creates 120 jobs.
Wow.
Yep. And we also have our corporate headquarters here at a separate building on Fifth Avenue.
So I don't know how many people know that we have a big fish processing plant in Anchorage.
I don't think many people do know. And I was excited to come on the show to kind of talk about that because I think it's, you know, more people should know what we're doing.
So when you talk about, let's give a little bit primer on how this industry works, right? The fishermen are, on the whole, are independent, and then you're buying the fish from them, processing the fish, so you're adding value to it, and then you're selling it to who?
We're selling it in terms of the local market. We're selling to nearly every retailer here in Alaska, from Fred Meyer to Costco to Sam's Club to Three Bears to Walmart. You can find our product in almost all of those different retailers. And then in terms of the restaurants, we sell to many of the restaurants, Glacier Brewhouse and Humpy's and Orso and lots of the major seafood restaurants here in Anchorage.
But I mean, but if I go to Fred Meyer and buy a salmon fillet, I don't know that it came from your company, right? I mean, that's one of the odd things about fish is it's still sold almost completely in bulk. And so the fact that you processed it is completely opaque to me. I don't have any way of knowing that as a consumer.
Right, exactly. When you're talking about the fresh case, that's definitely true. We do have a 12-ounce bag line of frozen products that we sell in the freezer case that's branded Copper River Seafoods product, and that's processed in the USA. And we also have a huge line of smoked salmon products that you can find at Walmart and some of the other retailers.
So but most of the product obviously is leaving Alaska.
Yeah, I read a stat once that every Alaskan would have to eat like 1 ton of seafood a year if we were to consume all of our own fish. And if you look at the average American consumer, it's about 15 pounds a year. So that's just not really realistic.
Although the Alaskan natives, if you read the anthropological stuff, they did eat a ton of seafood when they're in the pre-contact times. But yeah, so where is it going to?
We send we send most of it within the United States in the lower 48. We sell to all of the major retailers, and then we do sell to distributors that sell to food service, to restaurants. We do have some overseas markets for things like skate wings or cod melt. There's just not a lot of demand yet in the U.S. for those types of things. Mm-hmm. But most of it is domestic retail.
So would you be selling it directly to a grocery store that's somewhere else, or is there another set of hands that it passes through before it gets to them?
In some cases, there are different hands in the mix, but our best customers are the customers that we sell direct to. Mm-hmm. We find that that's a much better scenario for our company. It allows us to give the best value to fishermen, and it also ensures more traceability for the customers, and they like that.
Yeah, and that's a topic that I think we really want to get into is, because there's been a lot of discussion about that in the media about counterfeit fish and fish that's not what it appears to be. But I guess coming back to you, Kelly, I guess if that's one of the advantages of community-supported fishing, you know exactly where it comes from.
Definitely, yeah.
Is there an opportunity? I mean, when you talk about the story of the fish, are you sort of linking the consumer to that individual family that's fishing? And so there's kind of a little bit more of a trust thing going on there? Is that sort of part of it?
Yeah, we hope so. And so part of our goal is to support fishermen that do live year-round in coastal communities in Alaska. And through our program, we pay a higher price, actually. So they're getting a bit of a bonus, which they might otherwise get for bleeding or doing something to ensure higher quality fish. That's part of our principle in the program, is to help return that value and provide a bit of an edge in the marketplace, if we can, to the people that live and work in the state and want to stay in our coastal communities, and then also use low-impact fishing practices. So a lot of the fisheries that we work with, like the jig fishery, have a minimal environmental impact compared to some other gear types. So we're also trying to differentiate that in the marketplace and give that opportunity to buyers to choose fish that has that social and environmental value.
Cool. I want to talk a lot more about that, and I want to make sure that the listeners know they can get in on the discussion. We're kind of talking in the first half of Hometown Alaska about where our fish comes from, how it gets to the store, and those kinds of questions. And that my two guests are Kelly Harrell, who's Executive Director of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, and Cassandra Squibb, who's Chief Business Development Officer of Copper River Seafood, which I just learned today has a huge plant processing fish here in Anchorage. Thought I knew a lot about Anchorage. And if you want to get on the air with us to ask a question or make a comment, the phone number is 550-8433. And outside of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. The email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So let me throw this out to both of you. I mean, every other product I buy in the grocery store, it's a bit easier to figure out who's responsible for that product because it's in a package that tells me something about where it came from. But when I buy fish, And if I'm buying something like, you know, I love raw oysters. But you're really, if you order them in a restaurant or you buy them in the store, there's a lot of trust there because there's a lot that can go wrong with raw seafood. There's no way for me to know where it came from. And Cassandra, is there some history behind that? Or do you guys know why that is?
I think, as Kelly mentioned, it's a very complicated supply chain. But I think a lot of it is really just, times are changing with food. And I think people are becoming more and more interested in where their food comes from. Mm-hmm. And if you look at some of the retailers down south, people are starting to do that. They're starting to call out region. They're starting to highlight fishermen. Our company, we get asked all the time for bios, photos about fishermen. So there are retailers that are definitely getting behind that movement. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see it really get better over the next few years.
And your company really kind of pioneered this because Copper River Reds, which are really are very tasty fish and mm-hmm. kings because of the high fat content, were just, in the days of old, that was just another salmon, right? But then you branded it as being something special, and now you're able to sell it for crazy prices, right? And the first ones of the season.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of starting that idea that what river it comes from is important, what fishermen caught it is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the seafood buyers that we work with are starting to have more awareness about different regions. You know, Kenai, Cook Inlet, Sockeye, Arctic Kita is becoming more popular. That's Kita from northern Alaska. So there is more awareness coming. You know, Yukon River Kita, Yukon River King.
Mm-hmm. So, and then there's also this issue of making sure that the fish is harvested sustainably, which Alaska has a pretty good reputation in that regard, but it sounds like, Kelly, you're sort of working to bring that even down to a level where you can feel like this particular fish was harvested in a sustainable fashion in a relatively low impact way. And you mentioned the jig fishery, mm-hmm. and I'm not totally sure what that's all about. Maybe you could expand on that.
Yeah, it's a way to catch various species. Most people might be familiar with it in terms of sport fishing, so they might jig for halibut when they're sport fishing. This is a bit different, and then that the fishermen typically have machines on their boats.
Yeah, I was thinking otherwise. How could that possibly work? Right?
You can still do it with just a rod and a pole. It can be done.
You wouldn't make much money that way, I would think.
It depends. Depends on how much you're out there and uh-huh. how hard of a worker you are. Uh-huh. That's one of the unique things about this fishery is that it doesn't require a lot of capital investment to get involved in. So in Kodiak, it basically takes $75 to get a permit, and you might need a jigging machine and you might not. You could just go catch fish with a hook and line and earn some money. So that's one of the unique things about it, as Alaska's fisheries kind of become more and more difficult to enter into because of the cost of permits and quotas and things like that. Mm-hmm. The jig fishery is still one opportunity for people to go fishing and earn income in a way.
What are they targeting? Rockfish?
Cod and rockfish in Kodiak. Mostly guys go jig fishing other places in the state too and mostly catch cod, but in Kodiak they get black and dusky and dark rockfish also. So it's vertical hooks and lines, I think about 12 hooks typically on with a given machine. And I went several years ago jig fishing out of Kodiak. It was a great time. And so it has really minimal impact on the bottom with the gear and minimal bycatch also. So they can target specific species really closely. So it's kind of unique in that way and just a good way to go catch fish.
Yeah. And so then when you are linking that through your community supported fishing, rockfish is kind of a year round fish, right? Or is that this particular season?
It is pretty much year round. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So if I sign up for the service, I mean, am I signing up for like whenever rockfish show up, or would I say, yeah, I want rockfish 1 month from now? How does that work?
The weather has to be good for uh-huh. the guys to go out and catch it. And right now we're having a bit of that problem in Kodiak. So typically spring and some in the summer and fall too is when the guys that we work with are out catching rockfish.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So in terms of, but is it like, if I want to put it on the table, am I sort of signing up in January and it might show up in March? Or how does that work exactly?
No. So I think we'll hopefully do an offering of cod and rockfish here again soon. So kind of late spring, early summer, and might do another one in the fall, depending on what the supply is like. So we'd let you know. We'd put it out there a couple weeks beforehand that this opportunity was going to be available to buy fish, and you could sign up, and then you'd have it a few weeks later to serve and to enjoy.
So one thing I've heard about community-supported agriculture is it's great, but I couldn't eat any more kale. You know, like a big back box comes and you've got to, oh my God, we got so much of this we got to eat. Do people get like huge amounts that they have to sort of work their way through, or how do you address that issue? Like how much you get?
One of the great things about Alaskans is that they know that this is the best food in the world. Right. And they want lots of it. And lots of us have large chest freezers that we can put lots of seafood in. So that's a great advantage that we found in doing what we're trying to do. And we've been selling 10-pound minimums. So we encourage people, if they don't want 10 pounds, although what's 10 pounds of a 10-pound box of salmon or cod? That's, you know,
depends on if you live by yourself or have a large family.
It depends. But I think we all, in terms of our food choices in Alaska, this is what we need to be eating. And the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute has done a great job over the years of building that brand across the state. But here in Alaska, we need to really appreciate that this is a way better choice than, factory farm chicken from the lower 48 or some of the other protein options that we have. So we don't want to encourage Alaskans to buy that smaller box. I want to keep getting the volume up and making sure that this is our number one choice for protein in the state, and that we are supporting. These are our akin to our small, family farmers in the state, our small boat fishermen are. So if we want to keep our food dollars in the state and do what's best for, our bodies and our economies, this is the food we need to be eating.
Does the is the price less buying it this way as opposed to buying it from, a store?
It depends, actually. It can vary. A lot of times it is at a premium, so it's going to be more than what you would pay for at the store, again, because we are trying to get fishermen a better price for their product, and it does help support, our mission and the goals of our nonprofit. So we hope that people are, and the quality is really high, too. That's an important part of what we're delivering. So we hope that people will be willing to pay that price. And there's a lot of reasons seafood is costly.
Yeah.
Some people balk at the price, but there's a lot of really good reasons for it. And, you're really getting what you pay for when you buy Alaska seafood. Again, there's no other, better food for our bodies and, for our souls to a large extent.
I'm totally into it, but I think that one of the things, I grew up in Alaska When I was younger, I don't even think you could buy fish in the grocery store. I mean, it was like, if you bought fish in a store, like, what's the matter with you? Couldn't you get your own? And so I think we have a little bit of an attitude of fish is supposed to be free. And if it's 10 bucks a pound, like, are they kidding? What did that fish that I caught, was that $50 worth of fish? I don't know. I think there's an attitudinal thing there. And I guess so the question would be, well, why is fish so expensive? I mean, if it's coming from here, we're used to it being free. Why does it cost what it costs? Cassandra, do you want to jump in on that one?
I think that there are a lot of, that's a good question. There are, in terms of just the cost of fish, there's high fuel costs. Fishermen have operational costs. I mean, every one of those boats is a small business and they have to, operate. There's also transportation. Backing up a little bit, you have, let's just say you take a piece of you bring a salmon into a processing plant. Well, you have a recovery from a whole fish to a fillet. So basically the fish shrinks. And then you have
the salmon is like 50%, right?
And then you have a transportation cost to take the salmon from the primary processing plant to, in our case, we bring it, a lot of times we bring it straight into Anchorage and add value there. And then you have holding costs. So that's one of the benefits of having our company here in Anchorage is, let's just say a restaurant isn't going to be able to hold the 8,000 pounds of salmon they need to feed their customers all you know, in the off season. So we're able to hold that inventory frozen for them. Cold storage is expensive. Exactly. So those are, you know, those are some of the costs that are involved. Mm-hmm. Of course, the processing workers that we have and all of that, the G&A.
Right. So just as a rough percentage of the cutting, you know, the money that I pay at the grocery store for a piece of salmon, for example, what percentage of that is going to the fisherman? What percentage is going to the store? And what percentage is going to the processor?
I think that if you were to talk to any processor, they're really operating on incredibly slim margins. Mm-hmm. You know, our company tries to give as much value as we can to fishermen as possible. That's part of our core values. I mean, Scott's a fourth generation Cordova fisherman, so mm-hmm. he gets it and wants to make sure that the livelihood continues. So I think retailers typically have a margin that they need to put on top of it. And this is food. I mean, I'm trying to keep it as cheap as possible.
But to sort of get a sense of it, it's like a third, and mm-hmm. a third, or mm-hmm. is it something like that?
I don't know.
Not sure. Okay. what about this organic issue? And I don't know who wants to take this, but I mean, has that been resolved where they were saying that Alaska salmon wasn't organic because they couldn't there was for a while this ridiculous thing where they're saying farm salmon is organic and wild salmon is not because it couldn't be traced. And I just made everybody really mad, but I never really heard the outcome of that. Does anybody address that?
Well, I think that they could say that it was organic because they were feeding it organic feed.
Right.
And so, I mean, when you look at wild salmon from Alaska, there's nothing more organic than that. I think people understand that.
But now, in terms of the labeling thing, are we okay on the labeling? Has that been resolved?
It hasn't. And actually, I think the USDA is back at it again from what I just saw in the news yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it is a concern for Alaska's fisheries, especially salmon, because especially in the lower 48, it's hard for consumers to make that choice. They see all various eco labels. They see harmoniously raised, you know, farm salmon, right. All sorts of things that people are trying to brand their fish as in order
or
to sell it.
As,
so
yeah.
it's a big concern, you know, if in Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, there's organic Norwegian farmed salmon next to wild Alaska salmon for $4 less a pound, maybe. And it's going to be, you know, a problem for our brand and our fisheries potentially. And we think it's
and that farm salmon from an environmental standpoint is just a disaster, because I mean, if they really were feeding it like some low impact thing, but they're actually going out and catching fish from lower on the food chain, feeding it to salmon in pens and then selling it. And so it's bad all the way around. I mean, from an environmental standpoint, it's not something you want to be supporting.
Exactly. Yeah. Salmon are carnivorous fish. They have to be fed something, and that's. Mm-hmm.
I think farm salmon has created more preference for salmon overall, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think more people have tasted salmon as a result of farm salmon. And, you know, that's where I think ASME comes in and talks about the wild, you know, all of the benefits of eating seafood from Alaska. And people maybe know that they should pay a premium for that fish over the farms.
Right. Yeah. And that's what you guys have been gotten really good at. So, Cassandra, before you go, I wanted to get you to talk about what happens with the heads and the skins and all the discarded stuff from the fish that you handle. It's such a big issue in coastal communities, and I didn't realize you had a plant here in Anchorage. Are you able to use a lot of that stuff, and what do you do with the waste?
We're focused on full utilization of all the fish that we bring into our processing plants. So, you know, people see the nice, beautiful cod fillet. What they don't see is that we have homes for the cod skins. We sell those for pet treat programs. We do cod bits and pieces, which are the byproducts from the portion programs we do that we sell in 3-pound packs and sell those to the restaurants, and they use them for fish tacos and chowders and things like that. So we basically have a home for every fish, every piece of the fish that we bring into our plants, and that's definitely one of the benefits that processors are able to offer.
And that's a change from the past. I mean, that's something you've had to develop as a marketing thing and as a technological thing, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. This is it's a very limited wild resource. And so the more value we can get from every part of the fish, the better.
Cool. Well, I want to really thank you for being with us, Cassandra. Cassandra's going to take off, and we're going to have another guest as we go into the second half of the show and talk about preparing salmon. We're going to go through the season and talk about like what kind of, not only salmon, but all kinds of Alaskan seafood, what kind of seafood is available at different kinds times of year, and what can you do with it, and how could you integrate more fish into your life, the healthy, incredibly healthy food it is, and make it taste good. So that's coming up, but I want to thank you, Cassandra Squibb from the Copper River Seafoods. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And Kelly Harrell is going to stay with us from Alaska Marine Conservation Council. And when we come back from the break, I'm going to be giving out those phone numbers and email address, too, in case you as a listener want to get in. If you have questions about cooking seafood, if you have recipes or thoughts you want to share, or thoughts about the seafood market and how we get our food here in Anchorage. So stick with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is fish, eating local with seafood. And we're talking about Alaskan fish, of course. It's the best opportunity from all kinds of perspectives to have the food that's on your table come from our state, come locally. People who live other places can kind of get all of their food local if they want to. For us, it's not always an option, but with sort of the main course, it really is, because seafood is available and it's really healthy and it's really good. And so we've been talking about how you can integrate seafood more into your life. And second half, we're going to be focusing on what's good, what time of year, and how to cook it, and how to not be intimidated by the fish that you've bought or caught, and not be too worried about doing a good job of it for the people you're cooking for. So if you have questions, we welcome those. The phone number here is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Statewide, the number is 888-353-5752. And our email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I have Kelly Harrell is still with us. She's executive director of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. And Kate Constantin is an Alaska seafood consultant who works with a lot of different organizations on the culinary aspect of preparing fish. Kate, you are teaching and talking about cooking fish to different audiences. What kinds of misperceptions, fears, or intimidation sense that you run into? I mean, why do we, I guess if we're talking about chicken, everybody say, oh, I know how to cook chicken. What do they need to know about cooking fish that you find?
Well, thanks for having me, Charles. I think that one of the main things that intimidates people is that their perception that fish is really easy to overcook, which is something that people, I think, have run into frequently. And there's certainly an art to cooking seafood. I think that one of the most important tips I can give people is to just take it slow. Often when you cook salmon, sometimes you'll see that white substance kind of pop up on on the fillet as it cooks. And what that is a converted protein, and it's telling you your heat is too high, you've done this too fast. So what you want to do is try to keep that temperature down and take it slow. But another thing...
And that gives you more opportunity not to overcook it, because there's a longer time span available for you to take it out. If it's super high heat, you got to get it hit right in the exact moment, right?
Absolutely. And then another thing that sort of confounds people is unfamiliarity. And for Alaskans, we have a lot of access to salmon. I grew up commercial fishing with my family. Salmon was on the table 3 to 4 nights a week. I can cook salmon, you know, anyway. But it wasn't until I got older that I started encountering other species like rockfish or crab or spot prawns. And I can actually credit AMCC's Catch of the Season program with that. When I started buying into those programs, I started having rockfish in my home on a regular basis, and I learned a lot about how to cook it that way. So most Alaskans, I think, stick with the salmon and the halibut.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that breeds unfamiliarity.
Rockfish is really good. We caught a bunch of it last year, and I've been learning more about cooking it, and it's pretty easy to cook, and it seems like it holds up pretty well in the freezer. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree, and it has a somewhat high oil content, a little higher than cod, not quite as much as black cod, but it has a little high moisture to it, and I like to use it for tacos, cook it in tin foil with a little bit of lime juice and chili powder, and it stays moist throughout that whole baking process.
Mm-hmm. Have you guys done research on what factors are keeping people from using more seafood, or what factors are making people not want to cook it? I mean, obviously there's price and worried about, oh, I'm going to buy this expensive piece of food and then I'm going to ruin it. My sense is that I hear from people, oh, I don't want anything that's fishy and dry. And you find out that, well, that's because they're used to eating seafood that's really overcooked. Do you have thoughts on that, Kate?
Yeah, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute does a lot of consumer research on the national level. And we find that people are reluctant to eat seafood because they're concerned about spending money to get something that's premium and then not treating it well.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is some perception that fish tastes fishy, or that it'll make your home smell fishy, which is usually a ventilation issue. People in apartments don't love to cook fish. But there's other ways to cook it besides frying, and that's where we try to build that education in and teach them about the different varieties, different ways to cook it.
Right. Some of the traditional ways that we cooked a lot of fish were really unhealthy, like deep frying. And, you know, when I was a kid, it seemed like whenever you had halibut, it was bathed in mayonnaise and cheese and stuff, right? It's like so that it was just like a vehicle for delivery of mayonnaise. And people are not doing that anymore. Mostly. I don't run into it that much.
Yeah. I think that people are starting to find their way away from the mayonnaise jar.
Mm-hmm.
Although I did learn a trick at one point that a very thin layer of mayonnaise on any kind of fish or chicken kind of seals in the moisture, and that's sort of where that technique came from. But the globs on that halibut Olympia coated with breadcrumbs,
yeah,
that's a little passe.
Yeah, yeah. So how do you, from the point of view of the Marine Conservation Council, do you get involved in any of the sort of the stuff that Kate's talking about in terms of like developing interest in cooking and using fish?
Yes, we are. We've worked with ASME and...
which is the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute.
Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, yeah. And some other groups around the state to actually try and get... recipe cards. We've worked with the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association this past summer at getting recipe cards out at farmers markets, along with when we were selling Bristol Bay salmon and some of our other products at farmers markets, and trying to do things like cooking demos with chefs. And I know ASME and Alaska Grown are partnering on something that's exciting. I know Kate's been on the news talking about it some in terms of recipes that they've been developing that highlight new ways to cook Alaska salmon from some chefs in the state. So yeah, we love working with them and need to help anybody who might have an intimidation of cooking mm-hmm. seafood or
so
things.
What's that, Kate, what's that all about that Kelly was just mentioning?
Yeah, I'm really glad that Kelly brought that up. Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and Alaska Grown are teaming up on a promotion this summer called Eat Alaska. And what it will be is a series of recipes and recipe cards that Alaskans can pick up anywhere they buy food. They'll be in restaurants, mainstream chain grocery stores, farmers markets, and they're recipes that include Alaska seafood and Alaska Grown items in an effort to encourage Alaskans to choose those iconic flavors and important foods for both for our economy and because they're healthy and they taste great. So we've got recipes from chefs all over the state, things that are simple, things that are more gourmand, and we have a big variety.
Cool. Where do you find these? Are they already out there, or is it?
We're still in the design and print phase, okay. But you'll be able to find them at any farmer's market around the state. Uh-huh. Looks like Cars and Safeway are going to be having them, as well as Fred Meyer, and then all the restaurants that participated.
Are they relatively simple recipes? Or, I mean, when you say famous chefs, I think about, oh, God, that sounds really hard.
I think that they run the gamut, and that was deliberate. We have a really great salmon burger recipe with rhubarb chutney from Mandy Dixon down at La Belen in Homer.
Uh-huh.
And then a simple, you know, salmon and balsamic salad from Maya Avoy, who's a blogger in Kenai. And then we've got, you know, the Jack Spratt chef who was recently nominated for James Beard Award, who did a more elaborate pan-crusted rockfish with leek confit and a celery root mash. And some of it is a little more aspirational, but we mm-hmm. think that home cooks will be able to take components of it
cool.
and execute it.
So do you spend a lot of time testing recipes and creating recipes and that kind of thing?
I kind of stay out of the recipe creation realm. Uh-huh. And there's people that are far more qualified than me to do that. But the testing, for sure, that's my wheelhouse. And in this case, we took the recipes and did a 5-day photo shoot here in Alaska. And we used local photographer, local food stylist, and as much local, there wasn't a lot of Alaska grown to be had. Mm-hmm. But if we could use it, we did.
Mm-hmm. So when you're testing a recipe, like you've gotten something from a chef that you're thinking about putting it out to, you know, your clients, to serve to the world. What goes into testing it? It's just like cooking it as if you were at home, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, that's essentially what we do.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, most of the time the recipes don't need a lot of work. Sometimes we find that they need adaptation or, you know, substitution. Like, for instance, we got a kale kimchi recipe that had a sweet rice flour powder, which took me, you know, 4 different stores to find.
Right.
But you can also use a pureed pear.
Okay.
So, you know, that's where you
come up with those. So making it practical, yeah.
Workarounds.
And then do you, like, have a panel eat the recipes and see if they like it? Or how does that work?
I can tell you that there was nothing in this group that we did not like. But uh-huh. we had a team of 5 working on the photo shoot, as well as my spouse. And then every day after school, my teenage stepson would bring his friends over, and we had a really diverse group of Alaskans that was thumbs up or, you know, the so-so on things.
And, sweet.
And I think everybody liked everything.
Wow. How do I get to be your friend? That sounds like a great job.
It's a good life.
Yeah, really. Hometown Alaska, we're talking about fish and getting more fish into our diets. Eating local with seafood is our topic today. And you're just hearing from Kate Constantine, who's a Alaska seafood consultant and works with lots of different entities that are interested in testing recipes and doing culinary stuff with food. And Kelly Harrell is with me. She's the executive director of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. And if you want to join us with maybe you have recipes or tips on how to cook fish or questions, the phone number here is 550-8433. The number statewide is 888-353-5752, and the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So one of the main places we eat seafood is in the restaurants, and a funny thing that I've noticed is that a lot of restaurants will take seafood off the menu in the wintertime and then bring it back sort of as a tourist thing in the summertime. And you even see this in coastal communities that rely on fishing, where there's good fish being produced all the time. Is that, Kelly, do you think, is that just because people are ordering it? I mean, what's happening there? Why do we not have more seafood on the menu?
Oh, I don't know what restaurants you're talking about. The ones that I frequent, I guess, and the ones that we work with, like Beartooth, Alyeska Resort. We were just in Glacier Brew House the other day, and they had lots of great Copper River options on the menu. I guess I've seen kind of an eagerness to keep it on the menu more year-round. So that's disappointing to hear, because the way, you know, a good processor processes the product, it's going to last up to freezing and storage. And even if it wasn't caught in the last few weeks, we should still have the opportunity to eat it year round.
I used to write travel books, and I'd go to coastal communities, and it would just seem to me that the wintertime menu would sort of be assuming that now we're serving locals, and the locals already have all their fish, or the locals are tired of fish, and they want to have duck or steak or something. And then in the summertime, there would be fish dishes that would show up that were maybe oriented towards visitors who are going to Alaska, so they're going to eat salmon and halibut. And then I would talk to locals and talk to visitors, and they'd say, "My God, do people eat anything but salmon and halibut? You know, every restaurant I go into, it's, you know." And so to me, that's just my impression, but it seemed to me like that pattern existed. And part of it maybe is in coastal communities, a lot of people do have their own fish, right? So they don't order it when they go out.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of truth to that. Yeah. Alaskans certainly do harvest a lot of our own fish, and yeah, you might want something different when you go out to eat. So
yeah,
I know I was just in Homer recently though, and they had some, that's another place where they really keep it on the menu year round. And maybe that's a different case than some of the other coastal communities, or maybe they just have a different kind of access, because in some of the communities, again, like the seafood value chain, it might be hard. All that fish, you know, might be going to Japan or going somewhere else and not available to the local market. So that might be part of the issue too.
I think that's true. Kate, did you want to throw something in on that?
Well, yeah, I think that one of the other factors we're seeing is that salmon is not quite as dominant on local menus as it used to be. And salmon, yeah, it does have that May through August season at best. But cod, it has almost the opposite. You can get fresh cod almost all months except those. Rockfish is fresh year-round. People are bringing in the halibut and the black cod as soon as possible, sometimes late February, so that seasonality is more on people's minds. We're also seeing spot prawns on the menu pretty frequently now in state, I think. And that's also something that you can buy at the farmers markets or even in trucks on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
So there used to be salmon trucks, but now there's spot prawn trucks.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's great when that happens. It's a little bit like you got to grab it when it happens. And so it's, you know, wonderful what Kelly's doing is sort of bringing a sort of a flow of local seafood to us, so you can kind of be more predictable. So Janet has called in. Janet, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you for your show. It's wonderful. My quest is with pollock, and I would go to Safeway about a decade ago, and the person there in Safeway would whack off frozen chunks of a pollock for me. It's the least expensive fish, and I love fish. And I was thrilled maybe about a month ago when I found out that Safeway was carrying fresh pollock. When they didn't have fresh pollock last week, they showed me in the freezer where they have Alaska pollock fillets that are frozen and vacuum packed, and there are about seven of those. And I was listening to your show, and I turned around to make sure they're Alaska pollock. And this is my question. It says, contained fish, pollock. Then it says, product of China, wild caught. What is that all about?
All right. Well, I'm going to turn to my guests. Do we have an answer for that one?
I can answer that. That's something that we are seeing from time to time in the market, and people often ask about that. And what's happening is that, you know, the free market finds its efficiencies, and some companies have found that they can offer fishermen a better at the dock price if they minimally process it and then send it to processing facilities in China to sort of finish processing it, and then it comes back into our market. So it does do a back and forth. You know, it's something that consumers can make a choice on, whether that's something that works for them or not. But it's just something that some processors have chosen.
Wow. It just makes you realize what a strange world we live in, right? That it would make sense to take fish from Alaska, send it to China, and then bring it back from China and sell it in the grocery store? Okay. That's a good one, Jen. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Great question.
Yes. And I also like cod, too. And that's a very inexpensive fish. And, hello?
Yeah, we're still here.
Oh, okay. And so it is a matter of price, and we've been talking about that. I like to cube up pollock and cod and shake it with a little bit of flour and saute it and serve it on a bed of rice with kind of soy sauce on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very good, very quick. And I do the same thing with salmon, although the only way in which I can get salmon is if my daughter and her husband and family go out to Prince William Sound on the boat and get the salmon. They lay out shrimp pots, and they get this wonderful shrimp. I don't think you've talked about shrimp. It's spotted shrimp, the most wonderful tasting shrimp in the world, and salmon and rockfish and whatever they can get. But they didn't go out last year, so I didn't get my salmon and shrimp. But we do the same. I do the same thing. Cube up the salmon and saute in butter. And then my son-in-law and I came up with a recipe, and we've been perfecting it over the years. You can start out with very thin slices of onion and saute that in olive oil. Add a couple of tablespoons of brown sugar and a little bit of soy sauce, and you stir that up. And then you add that to the cube salmon, and you stir it all up and serve that on a bed of rice. It's very quick, and it's just absolutely wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so glad you're having this program, because I absolutely love fish and seafood products.
Thanks for sharing that, Janet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kate wanted to add something.
Yeah, if you can talk about the shrimp, because that spotted shrimp, I think, is only found here in Alaska, maybe Prince William Sound, and possibly Korea. So I'm going to hang up and listen to you on the radio. And thank you so much for explaining about the pollock problem.
All right. Thanks for calling, Kate.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for calling, Jana. And then I wanted to tell you about a tip I learned just the other day from a chef. Cod is also one of my very favorites because it's really affordable. And what he told me to do is take the cod and put it in freeze-dried potato flakes, like instant mashed potatoes, and pan sear it in that, and it makes the most fantastic, like, golden, crunchy crust. So next time you make cod, you should do that.
Interesting, yeah.
And then in regards to the spot shrimp, that's the same, also called spot prawns. People call them both. You can also get side stripe shrimp. You can get coon stripe shrimp. And anytime you see those trucks, I really encourage people to just pull over, buy it, and throw it in your freezer, and you get it all year round because they're fantastic.
Yeah.
And I often see the shrimp truck guy at the various farmers markets, so keep your eye open for him.
Okay, good tip. Let's go to Denise, who had a comment or question. Denise?
Yes, hello. I was just going to make a suggestion. It's really great to have recommendations from all these chefs and, you know, to profile these long-time, old-timers, salmon fishermen and such. But might you try profiling younger people? I have a 21-year-old daughter who power trolls with her husband out of Juneau. I have a 25-year-old son who's a crabber, Dungeness, and also long lines and does seining in the summers. And year-round, actually. And they would make an excellent profile. They're providing seafood to Alaska and the world, and they would be really good, a good marketing tool. We have a problem with the graying of the fleet these days, so it's just a suggestion.
All right. Thanks. Good point, Denise. Kelly?
Yeah, that's a great point, Denise. And the graying of the fleet is actually something we have an active research project going on with right now. We have quite a few young fishermen on our board at the Alaska Marine Conservation Council, and we agree with you. They are great faces of our fishing fleet in Alaska, and we definitely need to be doing more to support them. And we have a fledgling young fishermen's network that we've been working to solidify. So I couldn't agree with you more. Definitely need to figure out ways to support our youth in the industry.
Okay.
And Denise, I think you should keep your eye out. Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute just completed a video profiling power trollers in Elfin Cove, Ryland Bell, who's a professional snowboarder in the winter, and his family. We have some young people coming up, and right. I couldn't agree with you more.
Oh,
all right.
Good. My daughter and her husband were featured with two big gigantic kings on your website about a week ago.
So great.
They were very thrilled about that.
Thanks,
Thank
Denise.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.
And here's got a couple of emails. This is a question. I've enjoyed listening to the discussion. One thing on my mind is whether fish are showing up with radiation levels as a result of the nuclear disaster in Japan. Radioactive discoveries have been made along America's coast, but I don't remember hearing about fish specifically, and I'm worried about any fish we may catch or eat this summer. Does anyone know if testing is being done, if there's a global concern? Kate?
I'll take this one. The state of Alaska started doing tissue tests last year and found no evidence of radiation in a variety of species that they tested in a variety of locations on the coast. In addition, some of the private companies like Vital Choice and a couple others have invested their own money to do additional tests just to be safe. However, I'd need to check, but it looked like those tissue sampling programs for the state of Alaska were not funded by the legislature this year. So
okay,
you might want to look to the third parties, other companies. But so far, it looks good.
There haven't been any findings,
not at
right?
All. So not at all.
Probably not a concern.
Did you, Cook Inlet Keeper, I think, did some testing in Cook Inlet and Kachemak Bay also, and that everything showed up safe there.
Good. Here, another question, and I'll add to this one. Listener is asking, where can I buy local fish in Anchorage? And I think, obviously, you can buy fish a lot of places, but are there particular places to buy local fish? And then I guess just to add to that, the seasonal question, which we promised we were going to get into, is all the fish that we find in Anchorage local, or is there a better place to find local fish than another place?
No, it's not all local, actually, and I wanted to definitely put the warning flag out there to consumers. You know, if you're in Costco or if you're in Fred Meyer and a price just seems too good to be true, especially for things like king crab, that's a big competitor with Alaska seafood. It's probably not from Alaska, and it's probably Russian king crab, and it has kind of questionable legal and environmental origins behind it. So definitely ask really hard questions about crab in particular, because that's a concern that we have now here.
And a lot of times the signs will have euphemisms, which you really have to question pretty closely to get the accurate information.
That's right. And it's hard. I know even asking questions here at restaurants, I had somebody tell me once there was Bristol Bay shrimp in my chowder, and this was at a pretty nice restaurant, actually, and there's no shrimp to speak of that's going to be caught commercially in Bristol Bay, at least now. Who knows with how things are changing? But there's a lot of misconception, and you really do have to ask hard questions. I mean, probe, and if you don't feel good about the answer, then maybe make a different choice.
Right. So we're coming into salmon. We'll, another month or so, we'll be eating salmon. What are the? Let's go. You've got a chart there. I mean, halibut is available all year just because it's being fished all year. It's gotten so expensive that you can't really afford it most of the time. But Kate,
yes, actually, halibut season is from March until November.
Okay.
So that sort of holiday time period in late winter is the time when we're going to be eating frozen halibut. Mm-hmm. And as we said, the cod and the rockfish takes the summer break. Rockfish is year round.
Yeah. And unfortunately we're out of time. And so we didn't get to that topic, but we had lots of good information, to talk about. And I want to thank all of my guests, Kelly Harrells, Executive Director of the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. Kate Constantine is a seafood consultant, food consultant. And Cassandra Squibb was with us on the first half. She's Chief Business Development Officer for Copper River Seafood. Next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Kathleen McCoy for a show on aviation, the fight between Delta and Alaska Airlines, and issues about customer service as we fly. Pat Yak is Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media. Grace Bojean is our production assistant. Evan Erickson is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.